You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
Welcome back to the Rock Chalk Podcast. I am your host, Andy Metz, and today we are previewing what Kansas fans are hoping is the game for that for the second straight year puts them above the bowl eligibility win mark. Yes, Kansas is going to Stillwater this year to face the Oklahoma State Cowboys. Jason Bean is the quarterback once again for this game, so let's see if this is going to end the same way that the last one did. I know someone that is hoping that is not the case is my guest here today. He is, we call him the godfather of the 1012 Podcast Network, or at least I just started doing that. So, I don't know. Philip Slavin, host of the 1012 Podcast here on the network, the flagship show of the network, and, of course, an Oklahoma State fan. Philip, how are you doing today?
I'm doing all right. I am. I think this is the least, like, I don't know. I don't want to say emotionally invested as an Oklahoma State fan I've ever been. Most just like, okay. Like, I get the least up and down. And part of that might just be that I've reached a point in my life where I don't emotionally invest in very much. But that just sounds really dark. So we'll go with I have too many other things to worry about, and I can't let OSU sucking get me down.
What it really means is that it took you not very long for the inconsistency of your football team to just make it so you don't necessarily care as much.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
Kansas fans know that feeling very, very well. So you're in good company. But all right, so let's talk about this team, because like you said, like, this is a not great Oklahoma State team. I think there was a lot of people that thought maybe there was some potential after the wheels fell off last year due to a lot of injuries. A lot of people thought, you know, well, or I should say there was at least one person, you know, shout out to Ari Temkin, who thought that this Oklahoma State team could be really good this year, could potentially push to win the conference.
No. Hold on. It was less to do with they would be really good and more to do with when you looked at the schedule to begin the season, they had the one of the easiest schedules in the Big 12. And so the thought process was that if OSU was just good, they could find themselves in Arlington because of the way the schedule would stack out. Less to do with, like, OSU is going to be incredible this year and going to go on some.
Okay, fine. But the thought was that they were going to be pretty good, you know, decent and not the absolute train wreck that we've seen, you know, every other week from this team. So what has happened this year that has caused Oklahoma State the problems that they've had?
I'm going to start with this. They lost a lot to the portal, a lot of impact players, especially a lot of starters. And so you brought a lot in, and I'm not going to sit here and tell you that the guys you brought in are as talented as the guys you lost. I would say you did not bring back the level that you lost, but it's not bad, if that makes sense. You were going through a new defense. You got a new defensive coordinator and a new defensive scheme. You're going from the 4-2-5 to the 3-3-5. Which pushed back like Colin Oliver from defensive end to linebacker. You wanted to change the offense some, adjust it, the way it was described in a Pat Ford article or 40 article was Texas Tech meets Michigan. I'm still not sure I understand what that is, but I'll leave that to people who are much smarter about scheme than I. You brought in Alan Bowman, who hadn't been a starting quarterback in what feels like forever, to compete for or get the starting job, as we were all convinced was going to happen and were led to believe based off of preseason camp. And then you get into the season, you go, we don't know which quarterback to start. We don't know if it should be Mike Gundy's son. We don't know if it should be redshirt freshman Garrett Rangel, or it should be Alan Bowman. And for three games, they played all three for as equal a share as they possibly could. And it was worse than you imagine in your mind. But you've all seen it, so you understand how bad it was. The offense was disjointed. It looked bad. It was inconsistent. Nobody could get anything going. They held back Ollie Gordon and played a lot of the reserve running backs for the first three games as well. So you not only decided not to pick a quarterback almost on purpose, you also held back your best running back, one of your best offensive weapons. And so you got away with it against Central Arkansas. You got away with it against Arizona State, who's bad. And then it, frankly, like you can sit here and if your opinion is Oklahoma State's terrible because they lost to South Alabama the way they are, I would not argue with you. But what my argument is going to be is that they cost themselves a game keeping that shtick up for three games of the non-conference and treating the non-conference like the NFL preseason.
Yeah, I mean, and that's really what it felt like. Like, it felt like this was a team that was in preseason form. You know, there's a lot of reasons to, you know, kind of ease into your non-conference schedule. One of which being that whoever ends up being your starter, if you have guys that you're needing to, like, get on the same page, you get game action to actually do that with the guys that you know are going to be there. When you have, when you're sharing those snaps between three different people, it causes a lot of problems. And you know, we talked about this over on the 10-12 podcast, that like until they picked a quarterback, there was no way that that offense was going to do anything close to what it was capable of doing. I don't know, right, though, even with them picking Alan Bowman, like what I've seen the last few weeks from Alan Bowman, it's definitely been better than when they were rotating three. But what are the limitations of Alan Bowman, or what's been the issues for this offense? Because even in the win against Kansas State that they had last week, you know, it wasn't the offense that was making a bunch of plays. It was the defense slowing down what Kansas State wanted to do and then building a big enough lead that the K-State offense just wasn't able to come back.
Well, let's go a couple games here. I, at this point, I chalk the South Alabama loss up to you screwed around for 3 weeks. I might chalk the Iowa State loss up to you screwed around for 3 weeks, because the Iowa State game looked like a team that was playing week one. And then it took you a quarter to even figure out what you were doing. And then they looked better and the defense struggled. And so Kansas State's the first time we kind of felt like, all right, we kind of know what this team is. And they came in with a game plan and executed. Kansas State made mistakes. I mean, Will Howard threw three picks, including a pick six.
Yeah, lots of mistakes.
They had a fourth down on OSU side of the field that they went for, and the center snapped the ball when Will Howard wasn't even looking, and it meant nothing. And they had a fourth a turnover on downs on their side of the field. Like, OSU's problem against Kansas State and why you had a game that came down to the defense having to get a final stop because you're only up eight. Oh, by the way, you're up eight because Kansas State went for two when they should have just kicked an extra point to be down seven and not put themselves in an unnecessary hole that they have to go for two again, is that you couldn't execute in the red zone to save your life. And so OSU had massive red zone issues, which have been a problem for this program for the last couple of years. Didn't seem like they were as bad to start the year. That wasn't the issue with the offense, not that they spent a lot of time in the red zone, but it didn't seem like it's a problem. It was a problem again against Kansas State. It reared its ugly head. And so the offense looked better last week. The offense as a whole looked better. Take the red zone out. It did look better. It operated well. Alan Bowman played well. Ollie Gordon ran well. The receiver stepped out without Desan Stribling, who's out for the season. And so, like, I think you take away from the Kansas State game, like, two teams kind of tried to give it away, and Oklahoma State played well enough to beat Kansas State. And Oklahoma State did look better. Like, it is a team that looked better than they had all season. That's the best we'd seen them look. And so, depending upon, I'm kind of torn as an OSU fan, as I don't want to overreact to the Kansas State game positively, but I think everyone needs to stop overreacting to the South Alabama game negatively. Because two facts. One, again, the three quarterback system screwed them over in South Alabama.
Oh yeah, for sure.
They're not doing that anymore. It's over. If they were doing that all season, they're like, yeah, chalk it up. They're not going to win a game. And two, look, Mike Gundy at OSU for the last while has had one what the heck just happened loss and one what the heck just happened winning them every season. They might have done both already with the loss to South Alabama and the win to Kansas State. I don't know. Maybe they have another what the heck winning them that's a bigger what the heck winning them. But what I'm interested in seeing this weekend is just that, like, okay, you didn't have 2 weeks to prepare. Kansas probably isn't going to make the same number of mistakes Kansas State did. Can you execute in a red zone? I'm just like, this feels like the first time I can finally go, okay, now I can really evaluate what this Oklahoma State team is, because what they did for the non-conference made it impossible to actually figure out who this OSU was. Like, they are, to me, the last team in the Big 12 to really start to take their Final Four.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I'm also hoping that they'd have another one of those bigger wins, but, you know, let's save it for, I mean,
it's a ranked Kansas, so this would be a bigger win, so, right?
You know, save it for like 3 weeks, you know, playing in Bedlam. Like, I don't want to talk about Bedlam.
No.
Goodness. No. Goodness. We won't talk too much about Bedlam. We'll just say that if Oklahoma State's really going to pull out one of those, what the heck is that type of wins, that's the perfect place to do it for everybody involved. So, which unit would you say is better for this team then? Would it be the offense or the defense?
I think both have growing pains. I think the defense played absolutely lights out against Kansas State. We can talk about Kansas State mistakes all day. Oklahoma State's defense played really well, especially in that first half. They made stops they had to make in the second half. Like, you do as a defender have to be in a position to take advantage of turnovers.
Right.
And that game did come down to Oklahoma State got a stop on defense. The OSU offense got the ball back. And it's like, you got to get a couple first downs here. Couldn't do it. Had to give the ball back to Kansas State. And OSU's defense stepped up and got the stop. And so I think the defense responded incredibly well to a bad performance against Iowa State. I also give some credit to Iowa State for deciding that that's the week they wanted to launch an air raid offense for the first time ever. Like, after three straight no one treats non-conference like the preseason more than Matt Campbell. And so it's never shocking when they come out in the first game of conference play looking completely different than they did during the non-conference.
Well, it also didn't help that you kind of tempered your expectations for what Iowa State could do based off of the game that they had against Miami, Ohio, when apparently
Ohio.
Just Ohio. You're right. That makes it even worse, because you're right. I'm sorry. Miami, Ohio, that was Cincinnati. The game against Ohio, when they had, I believe the last I heard, it was like five players that were dealing with the flu, including their quarterback. So it's a little weird to, you know, see those 2 weeks back to back, but I think really the only thing that tells me is that Iowa State is one of those teams that's just as prone to up and downs as a team like Oklahoma State or half the conference at this point.
I mean, yeah, Iowa State might not be as bad. I think Iowa State took a while to figure out, like, oh, we can't actually run the ball. We should probably go ahead and just pass the ball. And, oh, I guess we can trust Rocco Becht to execute. And so, like, I mean, look, again, Matt Campbell treats the non-conference like it doesn't matter. I don't know why. I can't tell you. He just does, but so on and so forth. And so, like, for OSU, like, this idea that they're awful, I don't think they're awful. I don't think they're great. I think, like most of the conference, they're somewhere in the middle. And, like, at this point, I have a hard time with OSU, like I said, because the non-conference – the stats from the non-conference, the data from the non-conference, what we saw from the non-conference, I don't think is truly representative of what this team is because of how they handled the non-conference and playing three quarterbacks in the way they did. And so I have a hard time sitting here telling you, like, this is who OSU is, because we have two games, not five or six like everybody else, two games of knowing who the starting quarterback is, playing the actual starting running back. Like, I feel more confident in the defense because we can look there and say, like, I think this defense is a new defensive scheme with players who are young or first-time starters, with a first-time P5 defensive coordinator that I think they play well. I do think it's a well-coached defense. I think the secondary coaches, Hammerschmidt and Duffy, are two of the most underrated coaches in the Big 12. And I think the defense is going to have games where they're going to get beat. It is. It's, I mean, you're learning. You have a learning curve. I think they're going to have games like Kansas State where they play really well. And so the question is, frankly, like it's been for a couple of years, is if the defense can't do it, can the offense step up? So far, no, the offense can't and has not. Oh my gosh.
West Virginia, I know.
On fourth down. I know. On fourth and 10.
So while we're recording this,
for a touchdown.
While we're recording this, it looked like West Virginia was going to lose at Houston.
It's not over yet.
Right.
There's
12 seconds left, so there's still a chance. There's still a chance for something ridiculous to happen.
Tell me there's a chance.
Right. But yeah, no, it's, I mean, kind of to your point though, you know, Oklahoma State is a team that right now screams to me that they are like, they're bad, but trending to average, I think is probably the best way I would describe them. That they're
I would say that they are fine.
Yeah. They're
okay.
I'm sorry. Below average, trending to average. How's that?
That's fine.
Yeah.
And it's based off of first 2 weeks of the season. I have a hard time. Like, that's who this team is. That's not who this team is. And so I basically have two, I feel like I have two games of data to review the offense on. And that's a team that had put up 27 points against Iowa State, which was more than anybody else had put up against them at that point, and then struggled in the red zone against Kansas State and had their kicker kick six field goal attempts and make five. The only one he missed wasn't a miss. It was a block. It was poor protection. And so the offense is probably going to be an offense that averages somewhere around 28 points a game. And the defense is going to have to do its best to hold opponents under that. And I don't know. Like, I don't know. I hate saying that. Like, I'm supposed to come in here and be an OSU expert. I'm just like, they're fine.
When you don't know, when nobody knows, right, about how good a team is or what they actually can do, it's not fair to think that you're going to have something, you know, that everybody else can't get as well.
South Alabama is the low point, and it's not a full data point because of how Oklahoma State coached and played that game. And I mean, even in the second half, like when you're down the way they're down, they still stuck with the play. Like, they literally treated that game like it didn't matter. It's four down, whatever. We're still going to try and figure out who our starting quarterback is. Like, so at this point, like, OSU is an average team that will probably finish, as far as conference standing goes, middle of the pack, like a lot of other teams in this conference. Could the bowl streak continue? Maybe. You're 3-2. You've got seven games still to play. You got Houston at home on the schedule. You got Houston. You got UCF, BYU, Cincinnati, West Virginia. Like, could they get to a bowl game? Sure. If they miss one, would it shock me? No, God, no, not, it wouldn't. I think it's going to rely on them playing a lot of close games, the defense having to step up way more often than the defense, frankly, should have to. I don't believe in the offense.
All right. Well, you know, I do think it's fair to say that we don't have enough data to know for sure just how good this Oklahoma State team is. But there is one thing that we have plenty of data on and about how fantastic it is. And that is the collections from our sponsor here on the podcast, the Charlie Hustle Clothing Company. The Charlie Hustle is a vintage inspired clothing company based here out of Kansas City that specializes in collegiate and hometown apparel. They want you to be the best dressed fan this season. So make sure you go and check out their wide selection of officially licensed collegiate apparel. Today, you can show off your school spirit all season long. Look, we just got done with a fantastic game of the week feature where we gave away a Kansas football helmet tee to one lucky winner who will be getting that notification here pretty shortly. But they have a ton of great stuff. They have Jalen Daniels t-shirt. They have, you know, a whole bunch of, I'm a Jayhawk with one of the old logos. They have just so much great stuff. And of course, they don't just have Kansas. They have all of the Big 12 except for Cincinnati at this point. They also have Colorado who will be joining next year. And, you know, they have plenty of great collections that you are going to just absolutely enjoy, whether it's for you or for a fan of a team that you happen to know as well. So, all right. But that Make sure you go over to charliehustle.com. Use promo code 101215. That's TEN1215. And you can get 15% off of all non-sale items on the entire store. That's not a one-time code. That's a whenever you want code. And it allows you to go and get 15% off of all those non-sale items. So again, Charlie Hustle, vintage made fresh. All right. Wow. Breaking update as we are sitting here. Houston just scored on a Hail Mary touchdown to win the game. So that is absolutely ridiculous. It also gives you guys an idea of when we're actually recording this. Oh my gosh, that was absolutely insane. So on that note, you know, with the ridiculous offense we saw at the end of that game, like, what is the strength of this Oklahoma State offense?
The dumbest game of the year.
I know, it's awesome.
The absolute dumbest game. West Virginia scores on a 50-yard touchdown pass.
With 12 seconds left.
With a 49-yard touchdown pass. With
not only that, but they returned the kickoff. Used seconds there. Then they threw an out route to get just inside the 50. And then threw that Hail Mary pass that tipped around. It looks like it tipped off of like three or four different people, and a Houston guy was able to run into the end zone and get it off of the bounce. It's just absolutely ridiculous. So, Oklahoma State
vaunted West Virginia defense.
I was going to say, do you think that Oklahoma State has that kind of play in their playbook?
No one does. I love it for Donovan Smith because I still own stock in Donovan Smith. That is. You're West Virginia, and you're supposed to be a good defense. So Houston wins by two.
Oh my gosh, scoring 41 points—that's just ridiculous. Anyway, but this Oklahoma State defense or offense, what is the strength of this offense? The fact that it's taking you so long to come up with an answer, I think tells us everything we need to know.
Sorry, I'm sitting here like trying to
process everything. I
run
understand.
A Twitter account and watch this and so on and so on.
Oh my gosh.
I don't want to say it's like the run game or the passing game. I want to say that it's probably Ollie Gordon, the running back. Since they finally went like, oh, yeah, we have Ollie Gordon. Maybe we should stop giving it to other players on the team. We should just let him run the ball. Like, he's been very good. Elijah Collins is transfer from Michigan State. It's a nice backup. Jaden Nixon has some moments. But, like, since they're finally like, all right, you're the guy, he's passed 100 yards each game. He's got one touchdown. He got one against Kansas State. Like, Ollie Gordon is the strength of this team. Alan Bowman's played well. He is a better runner than you remember Alan Bowman being. He's all right. He's kind of up and down. Like, the offensive line is an Oklahoma State offensive line for the past few years. Like, it's fine. You lost your best receiver. Jaden Bray has been solid as a guy. They've got to get the ball to Brandon Presley. But, like, to me, it's Ollie Gordon. Like, Ollie Gordon at running back is the strength of this team. He's having to do a lot when the offensive line is – okay.
That sounds like a ringing endorsement for the offensive line there. But no, I mean, so then when Kansas is able to bring that pressure, like, how well is Oklahoma State going to be able to handle the pressure that Kansas brings on their defensive line? And I guess, how worried are you about the ability of this offense to execute?
I just think it's going to be inconsistent. And we've seen it the last few weeks. Like, if they can get – here's the deal. Casey Dunn is great on scripted plays. Like, he can script some very good plays. The first couple drives for Oklahoma State last week against Kansas State were some of the most creative, well-executed drives I've seen from OSU in a while. Then the scripted plays ran out. Then the offense was fine. Okay. And so, not a great offensive line. I actually think they played – fairly well last week, but like, not a great offensive line. Your best receiver's gone. Alan Bowman's it's been good. He's been the best of the three quarterbacks. And like, I don't think you have the most creative offensive coordinator. So, like, for an OSU fan, please understand, like, I am a bit pessimistic about this team.
I don't know. Some people might say it's realistic instead of pessimistic, but I guess we'll find out.
It might be.
All right. Well, let's jump over, or we will jump over to the defense here in just a minute. But before we do that, I'm going to go ahead and throw it to a quick break. We'll be right back on the Rock Chalk Podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
And we're back. I am here with Philip Slavin. We are talking about the Oklahoma State Cowboys ahead of their game against the Kansas Jayhawks coming up this weekend. Not so high on the offense. Seems like you're a little bit higher on the defense, but like, what is the strength of this defense? If you had to pick a unit that stands out the most, which one is it?
I think the defensive line's played fairly well. I think the linebackers are coming on. The DBs had a bad game against Iowa State. I think they played very well against Kansas State, and I am typically feel pretty good about the defensive backs. I don't know.
Man,
I think it depends on the week. Like, the defensive line's been solid. They really have. I think the DBs had a bad game against Iowa State. I think that they played fairly well. But they're beat up and banged up, and you've got some guys who are out from injury. I think Nicholas Martin has been a revelation at linebacker. I think Colin Oliver is learning, and I think Xavier Benson is better than he was last year. And so, like, I think as a whole, it's been pretty solid. And then it's just a matter of which unit steps up and which unit takes a step back each week. And I think it's hard for me to sit here and be like, this unit has been the absolute best unit, because I think they've been inconsistent, which is, of course, you have a new scheme and a new defensive coordinator and a bunch of new faces. Like, that is to be expected. And so I feel like, again, it's kind of like the offense. It's less to do with, like, I feel like this unit has been the best unit, and more to do with, like, I think there are guys on the field who've played really, really well and stand out, like Kendall Daniels and Nick Martin and Trey Rucker and Colin Oliver. And so it's less to do to me about this unit's great. I think defensive line, if I had to pick a unit, I'd say the defensive line's been good. Switching from a 4-2-5 to a 3-3-5. I think it's been harder at linebacker than usual, because now you need three instead of two. And you've got Colin Oliver, who's moved positions. And again, Nick Martin's picked up. I think you've got injuries to the defensive backs that have hurt the defensive backfield, that I think is better than when it's healthy, which is, you know, everyone says that. So I think it's more about players right now than it is specific units.
Okay. Well, then, in terms of this defense trying to handle the rushing and passing attack of the Jayhawks this week, then, which players do you think are going to have the best opportunity to stand out and have an opportunity to try to shut down what Kansas is trying to do? Or is there any that you think that, like, are there any particular matchups or any particular player?
I went on Bosco's boys last week ahead of Kansas State. And my point I made was, like, you've got to shut down one part of the offense and try and make Kansas State one dimensional. And I said, shut down the run game and let them focus on the pass. And I think they did a pretty good job of that early on. I think it's the same thing here. Like, can you find a way to bottle Devin Neal? And can you force Jason Bean to just be one dimensional? I like Jason Bean. Again, I'm not saying that they're, please, can't say, I'm not saying they're going to do that. I'm
saying, right.
You know, your defensive backs are banged up. And so, like, to me, the one dimensional is you've got to put the pressure on the running game and try and limit how effective Kansas is in it. You're going to give up a play or two that are probably a big play, but if you can, you'll give up a 50-yard run and a 60-yard run if the rest of the game they're averaging 1.5 yards per carry, right? And if the running and Jason Bean is stuck in the pocket and having to be just a sit-back pocket passer. And so, like, if I'm Oklahoma State, that's what I want to do, is try and limit Kansas's run game, because I think, like, Jason Bean's good quarterback and he's not as mobile as Jalen Daniels. But if you told me, like, Jason Bean's got to win a game with his arm, like, that's a lot of pressure on Jason Bean to do.
Yeah. I mean, the only game that he did that last year was the Oklahoma State game. So
sorry,
couldn't help it. But no, I mean, to your point, though,
God, I wish, like, he was bad last
year. I think the biggest problem with that, though, is, like, it's not like with Kansas State, right, where they have DJ Giddens and they have some other guys, but, like, he's the main guy. Kansas has two very good running backs in Daniel Hyshaw and Devin Neal. You know, they're both in the top 25 in terms of average yards per carry nationally, with at least 50 carries. That was something I actually pulled from for one of the articles we had over Blue Wings Rising. They've both been phenomenal. Daniel Hyshaw, you know, is on the watch list for the comeback player of the year because of the performance that he had this year. So, like, this is a two-headed attack in the running game that you actually have. Not like where most people are like, yeah, we've got, you know, one guy that averages 110 yards and another guy that averages like 50. No, you have one guy that averages about 120 yards and then another guy that averages about 87 or something like that. Like, it's a ridiculous, I'm sorry, Devin Neal averages just under 100 yards and Daniel Hyshaw's not that far behind him. And so it's, you know, you have a true two-headed running back game with two different styles of running backs too. And I think that's, like, Kansas State likes to run to the inside. I think Oklahoma State's very good up the middle. I wonder, though, how good are they at pursuing the running game out onto the edges?
I mean, that's where they tend to get got. I think a lot of teams do. Like, I'll use the Kansas State game as a comp. Kansas State has Will Howard, DJ Giddens, and Trayshon Ward, right? DJ Giddens, like, oh, it's going to be awesome. Will Howard had a 70-yard run. Outside of that, on the other nine carries, he had 34 yards. Giddens had 65 yards on 16 carries. Trayshon Ward had 59 yards on nine carries. Like, they put up 220 yards on the ground. Most of that came in the second half. The 70-yard run came in the first half. Most of their rushing yards came in the second half, which, you know, you're going to adjust your scheme. And so, like, I feel pretty good about OSU, especially if Kansas is going to try and run up the middle a lot and create running gaps. Like, I feel pretty good about OSU finding a way to limit Kansas's run game, unless they're finding opportunities to get outside and run down the sideline, which is, you know, that's,
which is Kansas's bread and butter, unfortunately.
And so, like, I feel somewhat confident the defensive line will be able to limit that for a while. The whole game, no. Kansas is going to, like I said, Kansas will break one off or break a two off and get a big play. Kansas is explosive enough to, like, I do think that's how you have to beat Oklahoma State, is you're going to make some big explosive plays. You're going to give some up. And I think OSU's always, ever since Jim Knowles showed up, has been kind of like, we're okay if we give up an explosive play here or there. We just want to make sure the rest of the time you're going three and out, right? You're getting 9 yards on a drive or 13 yards on a drive and you're done and out the field. So, I that would be my guess for Oklahoma State, is get after Bean, but try and limit the run game, especially up the middle, as much as you can.
Yeah, it's interesting, because while I'm not trying to say that these teams are, you know, the same levels, but, like, the situation reminds me, I think, very much like when Kansas went down to Texas, right, where Texas, you know, Kansas was able to stop Texas for the first half, essentially, and limit them to, you know, field goals when they got down in the red zone for the most part, and kind of keep it a game for a really, really long time there. And into the third quarter, but eventually the dam broke. Eventually The offense was able to break through because the Kansas offense wasn't able to do anything. And I think that's where, you know, that like, I think that's what this game comes down to. How well can Oklahoma State move the ball? Are they going to be able to stay on the field? Are they going to be able to keep the pressure on Kansas's defense to actually do something and give their offense, I'm sorry, and give their own defense time to rest to actually be able to make those plays? I'm worried. I think if I'm, you know, if I'm rooting for Oklahoma State, I'm worried about the ability, one, of the offense to be consistent enough, and two, for the defense to be able to get to the edge, because there's a reason that I constantly rave on this podcast here about Jared Casey, especially as a blocker. He is always on the outside where the run is going, out on the edge, blocking one or two guys to open up big lanes for people. And so I think Kansas plays to the outside. They have, I would argue, some of the best run-blocking wide receivers in the conference because of how much they do it, how willing they are to do it, and just, you know, how big of a part that is of their game. And so I'm worried about Oklahoma State. Well, I'm not worried being a Kansas fan, but, you know, in terms of if I'm Oklahoma State, I'm worried about the ability to keep my defense off the field long enough that they can hold up for an entire game.
Like, OSU defense isn't going to hold up. Like, they're going to give up points to Kansas. Even if the Kansas comes out and is limited early, like, they're going to get points late. And I think in this game, if you're OSU, like, you have to get up. Almost, it's kind of like the Kansas State game. You've got to get up and then just maintain that lead. Because I just don't know if OSU has it in them to come back from a deficit. And I think if OSU gets down big, like, especially late, like, I don't know if they can mount a comeback. I'm not saying they, like, maybe they can. I don't know that that's this team, that they're going to get suddenly turn things around and mount some massive come from behind win. And the way Kansas has played in the second half of games the last few weeks, like, I wouldn't pick OSU to make a comeback. Like, I don't think once Kansas gets out there, you're going to limit them. Now, the one thing I'll say on Kansas is this. Kansas has a benefit against teams that have not played Kansas before, because I don't think you can prepare for Kansas just watching it on tape. We've talked about this. I think you have to play them. The thing for OSU and the concern for OSU is, yes, Oklahoma State has played Kansas. Brian Nardo hasn't. And I think it's similar to the advantage they had against BYU. I think it's similar to the UCF. Like, you're playing a team that hasn't played Kansas before. And, like, even for Oklahoma State, like, yes, OSU's played them. But Nardo hasn't. Your defensive coordinator is a first-year defensive coordinator. I think Kansas should have the advantage in this game, because I just think it's a hard offense to play if you haven't sat there on the opposite sideline and faced off against it. So, like, it's definitely a game for me, for Oklahoma State, of you've got to get up and you've got to stay up and hold on to a lead. Because if you don't, like, you're not going to stop Kansas all game, and their offense gets rolling by the second half and your defense gets tired. It's just going to be too hard to mount a comeback against KU.
Well, and honestly, you're right. Like, that's easier said than done. I mean, we've seen how many times this team has gotten down, Kansas gotten down pretty big in the first or second quarter, and then mounted a comeback either in the first half. And I'm not just talking about this year, but last year as well. Like, this is something with an Andy Kotelnicki offense. You know, they went down 14-0 against Houston, 14-0 against West Virginia on the road, and came back and won both of those, and actually were leading by halftime. You know,
has Kansas trailed this season?
Well, other than Texas, you mean?
Okay, other than the Texas game, has Kansas trailed this season?
I don't believe so, actually. No, they, like, have not. So,
Yes, they did at the half against BYU. That's right.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yep, 17-14 against BYU at the half, and then they came out and just annihilated them in the second half, which was awesome. But no, I mean, this is a team, though, that knows, because it's so many of the same people that were here last year, especially on that offense, this is a team that knows that they can perform offensively to come back from a deficit. And so I don't think this is similar to, like, the Kansas State game, where even if Oklahoma State gets up big, it's going to be, I think, a bigger deal for them to keep the Kansas offense down, because this is a Kansas offense that can flip that switch pretty quickly. you know, and things will start to kind of roll for them. Obviously, there are situations where they're just not able to do that. But, like, if I'm worried about a team that can come back quickly, Kansas is, like, the perfect kind of team that can do that. And that means that you have to be, you know, playing at your best defensively for pretty much the entire game. Because all it takes is a six-minute stretch for Kansas to build some momentum and then, you know, use that to shoot off and score 30 points. So, I mean, I think that this is a game that, you're right, it's going to come down to, can Oklahoma State bog down the Kansas offense enough, one, to, you know, allow them to have a bunch of time, essentially, like, you know, turn Kansas's drives into long drives, but then also keep their offense on the field often enough to allow that defense to continue to kind of bog down what Kansas is trying to do. I think if I'm picking this game, I have a hard time imagining that the Oklahoma State offense is going to be able to stay on the field long enough. I mean, what do you think is the most important, like, matchup or, like, the X factor for this game that decides how it goes? Or let me rephrase. If Oklahoma State is going to pull off the upset, because as of right now, Kansas is still favored in this game, what has to happen for Oklahoma State to win the game?
Well, one, I think, God, I don't know. You're going to have to get to Jason Bean and make him uncomfortable and unhappy. Like, you're going to have to mess with Jason Bean. Like, you're going to have to make it, get him to make mistakes. Kansas doesn't turn the ball over a lot. Kansas plays really well on special teams. The defense plays way better than everybody thought they would do. And I think they're good at making enough turnovers to help them out. And so for OSU, the biggest thing is on defense, can you limit the run and make Jason Bean uncomfortable? On offense, you can't settle for field goals in the red zone. You cannot face Kansas' offense and settle for field goals in the red zone like you did last week and just say, well, our defense will do the job. Because if that's what you're going to do, you're going to lose. And so if Mike Gundy if they don't have a game plan in their red zone to execute and they're settling for three, like, they're not going to win this game. They're just not.
Yeah. All right. Well, so, I mean, I guess we'll kind of leave it there. I mean, what are your expectations for this game? Or what would you consider to be a successful week for Oklahoma State? Do they have to win the game, or is there something else that you can see from this team in this game that would have you feeling okay coming out of it?
My head tells me Kansas wins this game. Like, to me, Kansas is the better team. Period. Hands down. Kansas is the better team. Like, you should pick Kansas. Now I'll throw the trend stat at you. Oklahoma State has now won 8 of their last 9 as a home underdog under Mike Gundy. They play well at home. They play well when they're a dog. They got an extra day of rest, I guess. I'm supposed to consider that. It's not even an extra day. It's like half a day. You played Thursday night. You played Friday night. They played Saturday afternoon.
Yep.
So 12 hours. Let's call it 12 hours. Kansas should win this game. And I think Kansas is the better team. But, man, this is just like Gundy spots. Like, I always struggle when, like, trend says pick one team. Head and heart says pick the other. And, like, head and heart says Kansas. Trend says Oklahoma State. So, yeah,
I mean, I think what's different here is that we're used to seeing a Kansas team that just is bad.
This isn't even about, like, I don't care about Kansas history. Kansas history is last year and this year. Like, the only Kansas history that matters is last year and this year.
That's fair.
You haven't adjusted your perception of Kansas based purely off of last year and the first half of this season, that's a you problem.
No, that's fair. But, like, even last year, like, the big issue was the special teams was a mess. Bringing in Sean Snyder from former Kansas State guy has completely changed this special teams for the Jayhawks. And that's been a huge strength for them. Like, it's one of those that you don't pay very much attention to it unless it has a huge impact on a game, like a, you know, punt return for a touchdown. But Kansas has consistently been able to flip field position, you know, to take advantage of on special teams, getting themselves set up really well to be able to actually do things offensively. So, you know, I think that's kind of an underrated thing for this team. And honestly, like, I think that Oklahoma State for a while has had those sorts of advantages on defense and special teams. I don't know that they have them here. Like, I look at across all the units, and Kansas has a better unit offensively, defensively, and special teams. The question is it enough of an advantage in each one?
I'm going to call the special teams neutral at best. Like, we're going to disagree on special teams that Kansas has an advantage. Metric and ranking is different.
That's fair.
Okay. And so depending upon what you want to look at, okay. I don't think the difference is PFF has Oklahoma State as the sixth best special teams and Kansas is the 10th. So I'm not saying PFF is the end all be all. My point is that
That's fair.
You want to say Kansas has an edge on offense and defense, that's fine. Special teams are negligible. Like I'm not going to give the edge to either team. I think both have solid special teams. I'm not going to play the special teams game.
Okay, no, that's fine. But I think the point is though, in the past and even last year, Kansas was significantly worse on special teams than everybody that they played, basically, with the exception of Tennessee Tech. Kansas has made a huge leap there, and I think it's an even bigger leap than their defense has made, and it's having an actual impact on games for them this year, whereas last year it was having a negative impact for them. And so I think that this is a year where you come in and you're just like, you know, it's really easy, kind of like you said, if you're not adjusting your expectations for this Kansas team based off of just the last couple years, like last year and this year, then you're losing out on a real big opportunity to actually – you know, evaluate this team appropriately.
I'll be interested to see which team has the most missed tackles in this game.
That's fair. Kansas tends to miss a few and then mop them up with somebody in the secondary. So it'll be interesting. You're right. All right. Well, anything else about this game that you want to make sure that we cover before we get out of here?
No. No, I'm going to go to bed.
All right. Well, here, why don't we end it on a note that will be a little bit more fun for you? We obviously were talking earlier about the whole craziness that is the Houston and West Virginia game. I know that a lot of people have said that the Big 12 has been down this year, but are you finding a lot of the games this year to be more entertaining because everybody is kind of close and there's all this newness, or is this really kind of just feels like a placeholder season until next year?
I'm not sure I would call, like, there have been entertaining games. I'm not sure I would call the season more entertaining than usual. Like, we just had this one of the weirdest games ever between Houston and West Virginia. Red River was really good, but I'm not going to sit, like, Colorado TCU is exciting, but I'm not going to sit here and tell you, like, it's been great, awesome games. The Big 12's down this year. Like, most of the conference is trending down or at the bottom or midway through their development cycle. And so, like, it's a down year for the conference. It is. Like, I'm not going to sit here and be like, I know I'm supposed to bang for the drum for the Big 12 and never say anything negative about it, but like, it's a down year. Like, what sucks for Kansas is, this feels like a year that if Oklahoma and Texas if Texas was the Texas of normal, Kansas is playing in Arlington. Like, I think Kansas is at the top of a development cycle. And like, I think this is one of those, like, Kansas would be the team this year. Like, our whole, like, somebody new makes it to Arlington every year. Kansas would, or this year it needs to be Kansas, Texas, Tech, West Virginia, or one of the other four. Like, hey, guess what? West Virginia and Kansas are sitting here. I mean, West Virginia's lost to Houston, so we can be done with that conversation. But like, Kansas feels pretty solid. You played Texas, you got that out of the way, you lost bad, but that's, you know, okay. You get Oklahoma at home, you're going to be coming off of a week off, they're going to have played UCF at home,
right?
You go to Iowa State, yeah, could be weird. Yeah, you get Texas Tech and Kansas State at home, you go to Cincinnati. Like, this feels like it should be a year that, like, in a normal Big 12 the last few years, Kansas should be looking at potentially playing in Arlington. Alas, Oklahoma is good and Texas is good as well. And so, like, it's just, it stinks because I made this comment on the 10-12 pick show, and I stand by it. This must be what SEC fans feel like all the time, where it is October, the middle of October, and your conference championship game is decided, and everything else just for who gets to go to a good bowl game and who has to go to Shreveport. We have a real race. I know you're going to give me the Kansas still has a shot here, and I love you, Andy. I really do. Like, Kansas would have to beat – Kansas has to get to Arlington. Kansas has to win out. Like, period, end of story, yeah. Hands down, has to win out. I am not picking Kansas to win out. If you want to say that that's a possible thing, I will listen to the argument, and I will not argue against you. But I'm not going to – I'm not buying a Kansas wins out ticket. I'm just not. So the point here is, like, this is how SEC – but SEC schools every year are like, no, this could be the year, A&M, that we could beat Alabama, and we could get – this it's top heavy with the top two, a big mess in the middle. Kansas should probably finish third in the standings in the Big 12 this year and have a really nice season and go to the what would it be the Alamo Bowl against I don't know.
Last
Oregon
I
State,
saw USC
UCLA US oh god
like that was the last projection was Kansas versus USC.
I need healthy Jalen Daniels because I want to watch Jalen
so
Daniels score
awesome.
80 points on USC's defense.
It would be so awesome.
Jalen Daniels versus Caleb Williams is the bowl game we all freaking deserve.
Yeah. It'd be even better if we could, you know, just do it in the Sugar Bowl. Okay, I'm going to stop at this point, but we'll leave it there. Philip, thank you so much for joining me. For anybody that wants to catch all the stuff you do, where's the best place to find it all?
I mean, if they don't know by now, I don't know what to do for them. Every podcast is someone's first. I'm kidding. Of course, you can listen to the 10 Hole Podcast available everywhere. You can find every show, including this one and the 10 Hole Podcast at 1012network.com. T-E-N, the number 12, the word network. We are on Instagram at 1012pod. We are on Twitter at 1012network. We are on Patreon. Check out 1012 Network. We got some fun stuff. You can find us all over the place, everywhere.
I also love it when you can do like half of my outro for me by, you know, talking about all those things. So, but
you're welcome.
Yeah, exactly. So, but that is going to do it for us today. Philip, thank you so much for joining me. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you have not already, please do go out wherever you get your podcasts, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, any of the other million apps that are out there. Just search for Rock Chalk Podcast. You can subscribe, get every episode as soon as it comes out. If you give us a rating and a review, 5 stars, nice comments would be absolutely fantastic. But if for whatever reason you can't do that, just let us know what it is we can be doing better. We really do bring the podcast to you guys, get you all the information you need in as entertaining a way as possible. So if you have any comments, questions, suggestions, people you want to interview, anything like that, contact me by email at rockchalkpodcast@gmail.com or on Twitter at rockchalkpod. Of course, you already heard Philip talk about all the stuff with the network. We are so happy to be part of the network and partnering with Sports Social, the biggest podcast and the best podcast network over in England, I believe it is, but European podcast with all of those fantastic sports over there. So, but that's going to do it. Make sure you guys visit our sponsors, Charlie Hustle, Prize Picks, get some great deals with them over there. But thank you so much for listening, and we will catch you guys next time on the Rock Chalk Podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.